Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. On a ship, firing arcs are the lines, while hull zones are the spaces between the lines. This distinction matters, because when shooting, you may use the entire width of those lines to check for your arc, and when being shot at, your opponent must hit the black space of the target hull zone before any part of those firing arc lines. Knowing the difference will speed up your shots and reduce the chance of an argument over line of sight. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 24th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. So last time, I said I was going to talk about the Quasar on this episode. Then we got the Hammerhead preview, and I was all ready to add that in as well. Then we got a brand new FAQ dropped, and it was so hugely impactful that I said to myself, "Self, they just announced that the street date for Wave 6 is July 6th, and that's a little ways off. So no one's going to care about your stale hot take when they're going to have it in their hands, especially when this FAQ just hit. So I'm dropping those in favor of huge FAQ news. This is a game changer. If you haven't checked it out, go to Fantasy Flight's website ASAP. Obviously, they waited until after Worlds and the European Championships to completely alter the state of the game, and alter it they have. First off, let me say that I like these changes. They bring some much-needed balance back to list building, and now not every top list you see will be a near-carbon copy of each other. So let's look it over. It's got a lot of errata, so I'm definitely considering either using their images to print new card faces to slide into my card sleeve, or just doing it for the text portion of the card. At the very least, I'll be putting a little sticker on them with a letter E so they remind me. The biggest one for me was that Ryken really got taken down a few pegs. I've said before that I was tired of seeing Ryken all the time and tired of playing him, and even suggested some ideas because I thought he needed only a little tweaking. Fantasy Flight apparently disagreed with me. I think the reason why he got dropped that hard was because of how good he was with squadrons, while my ideas tweaked him around keeping ships up. Now, his ability can only be used once per round. It's not going to affect ships too much with the right flying, and I love how it forces strategy and hard choices on the Ryken player about whether to use it or not. The next biggest change for me is removing the lifeboat. I've seen too many games lately where the flotilla with a commander on it deployed either on the other side of the board or way behind the rest of the fleet. With Relay, there's very little risk to doing that, so it really was a no-brainer to do in a competitive situation. Now everyone has to put their commander on a more expensive ship that doesn't have a scatter token on it, making them both more in the thick of the fight and more thematic. Star Wars commanders don't hide on transports. They command from the bridges of star cruisers. Bomber Command Center no longer stacks, which means that it's not the go-to upgrade for squadron lists anymore. You're going to see more variety in upgrades, which is good, and it's going to make squadrons just a little less potent, which I know will make some folks very happy. Demolisher no longer works with engine techs, so now you have to start a speed 3 attack run at red range instead of just out of it, putting demo in a little more peril. I personally haven't been using engine techs on my demo for a while, so I can say that the real risk in this is minimal, as long as you can either activate it last and have some good defense token usage, or provide a more threatening, juicy target for the big hitters to shoot at. Rapid launch bays are finally definitively straightened out. It doesn't cost squadron activations to place squads held in reserve. This is the only definition that made it worth its points, in my opinion, and I'm glad to see it become official and clearly explained. Whether or not it'll see any use, well, we'll have to wait and see. Turbo laser reroute circuits are an exhaust-to-use card now. Having been on the receiving end of a TRC-90 swarm several times, I get how powerful this card was and why they might look at reducing its power. On a CR-90A, it was just too good and gave consistent damage that other ships really couldn't match. So while the CR-90A is the loser here, the winners are MS-1 Turbo Lasers, as they just got another card they can affect, and the Architens, who, with only one evade, was only going to use it once anyway. Finally, Reimer's range got reduced from medium to close. It's still longer than Rage 1, but close enough that all enemy ships can do anti-squadron attacks. While Reimer was certainly annoying and a must-take for Imperial bomber wings, I didn't think he was unmanageable. I surmised that the reason he got reduced was because of the coming of Sloan, who was going to make TIE fighters shooting at blue range ridiculously strong. I don't know that he's worth his points anymore, though. He might need a 1 or 2 point reduction to be efficient again. Oh, and one last thing that you might have overlooked, the must errata for jamming field was taken out. Whether that's an intentional or a mistake will become clear eventually, but without any clarification, as of last Monday, you can flip jamming fields on and off at will. I just wouldn't expect that to stick around for very long. What's that? They've already updated the FAQ to put the must wording back in? Oh, jamming field. The candle that burns brightest burns half as long. Now, on to list building. List building is a key skill in Armada, though not as much as in other games. In some other games, taking the best, most point-efficient units can win you the game right there. But what I love about Armada is that the lists aren't the be-all, end-all. The most important skill is how to play your fleet. Being familiar with your list's strengths, weaknesses, and maneuverability is worth far more than having a bunch of ships and upgrades you don't know how to use to maximum effect. That said, taking the right upgrades for the right roles and the right ships is the second most important. When I'm making a new fleet, I usually have two inspirations. Either a strategy, like I want to hit and run, or bomber wing. Or a theme, like my trench run reunion list, or trying to recreate Phoenix Squadron from Rebels. First off, let me just say that not all lists you make will be successful. Sometimes you'll make one and be really excited about it, and then it gets blown out of the vacuum, so be prepared for that. I just deleted a list last night that I tested out once. It was fun, but it had major flaws that were basically unrecoverable, and it's gone. I'm sad, but that's the way it works. Second of all, don't give up on a list when it gets beaten. I like to play at least 2 or 3 games before I give up on it or make tweaks to it, unless something is really obviously broken, like the list I played last night. So, when it's a strategy, I look at what ships and squadrons work best with that strategy. If it's a hit-and-run list, I'm going to be looking at fast ships that dish out a lot of firepower, and I have to decide on if I want survivability in there too. If it's a squadron-heavy list, I'm going to be picking those first, and then looking at good carriers to pair them with before working into damage dealers. Then, I have to pick a commander. I'm either going to go with one that accentuates my list, or shores up a real vulnerability. For example, in an Imperial hit-and-run list, I might choose Screed to do more damage, especially if I'm using a lot of black dice. Vader for big hits as I burn tokens on the approach when I'm not worried about survivability. Or Tarkin to get nav or concentrate fire tokens when I really need them. Conversely, I might take Mahdi if my list is having a hard time surviving to get into attack range. You might need a lot of practice games to get the right mix of those. A note about choosing squadrons in your list. If you don't have a carrier in your fleet to throw orders around, you're going to want to look at squadrons with Rogue. You won't get as many, but you will also get to use them to their full potential. Otherwise, you need to plan on eating a round of shooting before you can fire back with non-Rogues. When it's a theme, it's time to pick out the stuff that works with that list. In my example of Phoenix Squadron, that means that I'm going to grab Hera, some A-Wings, Phoenix Home, and Sato. Then, I'm going to limit myself for additional ships and squadrons to ones that have appeared in Rebels, Y-Wings, Nebulons, lots of Corvettes, maybe Ketsu Onyo. Then I have to decide on a strategy I want to use, and equip cards to carry that off. After I probably get destroyed for a bit, I will likely soften up on my stance on the theme to make it a little better, maybe throw in some X-Wings or an MC-30, or I just shelve it as a failed experiment. But you never know, it could be a runaway success. Either way, once you get everything set the way you want, you're probably going to be over points. This is where the hard part comes in, making difficult choices about upgrades. You're going to need to balance the amount of the bid that you want with how important some of your upgrades are to your list. Squadrons may need to be dropped or swapped out for cheaper ones. Squadrons are also often good ways to fill in extra points, either when they're bumped up to an ace or a better squadron for that role, or just adding cheaper ones. Speaking of cheaper things, upgrades like Skilled First Officer or Medical Team are a good way to get something in at the margins when you think your bid is just a bit too low. Other things to look at are dropping a ship to a less expensive version if it doesn't change the role it fills too much, like the Pelta, and really look hard at those upgrades. While you probably don't want to drop ECMs from a big ship, Lando might be a good candidate. If you're running Screed or Tarkin, does Ordnance Experts really give you that much more on a Gladiator? Those are just some of the kinds of questions you'll need to ask. Just remember what it was that you changed or dropped, because once you test your list, there's bound to be areas you can improve on. You may find that you really do want that upgrade or squadron you dropped and need to make room for it with the upgrade that you just put on. Like I said before, though, play it a few times before you make a change unless it's really obviously broken. Finally, unless you have objectives in mind from your strategy or theme, you're going to have to pick objectives. I've covered those in previous episodes, though, so I'll refer back to those. I will say the same thing again, though, play it a few times before you make any changes on those. To illustrate what I've been saying, here's how I made my Trench Run Reunion Tour list that I took to regionals. I started with the theme. Now that Biggs had been released, I could get the gang from Yavin back together. That covered squadron selection. Biggs, Luke, Wedge, Dutch, Gold, Han, and Rogue to cover the rest of Red Flight. I wanted to fit in Leia somewhere as well, and it also pointed me towards a commander, Dodonna. I looked at the makeup of that squadron and noticed a lot of bombers. The fighter wing also clocked in at almost 134 points, so that's a significant chunk of change there, and I should probably make sure that they're properly supported. Plus, Dodonna would make bombing crits great. To that end, I decided that I really wanted to kit out a Yavaris with a build I wanted to try. Then I'd still need a dedicated carrier for the other squadrons, and also a transport for Bomber Command Center. Since my only thematic restriction was the squadrons, I was free to take any ships or upgrades I wanted. The Yavaris build I chose was now a common one. I had Flight Commander and Fighter Coordination Team on it so that it could both resolve its commands after moving to make up for a lack of boosted comms, and the FCT so that I could move squads into attack range after that move. Resolving the order after moving then meant that the squadrons hadn't officially moved, so they could double tap at will. I looked at an MC-80 for the carrier, but decided on a cheaper assault frigate. Since I lacked intel, I wanted to make sure my fighters had enough punch to rip through enemy fighters to start their bombing runs, so I added flight controllers and boosted comms to make sure that the faster frigate would be in range to issue those orders. Since I was using a three-command ship, I added Leia to the transport to help with adaptability, and then made it Bright Hope so it would live longer. I had some points left over at this point, and wanted to make sure I had a fourth activation, plus I wanted to fit Torin Farr in so that I could help those five-die flight-controlled X-Wing aces do as much damage as possible. I'd need a ship that would stay close to the fight, and ideally take advantage of Torin as well, so I took a nice cheap CR-90B as Torin's ride. Then I added ECMs to the frigate, since it was the flagship, I wanted it to survive, and put double turbo lasers on it to help with that long-range shooting I planned on doing with it. Lastly, I added some ion cannons to the Corvette to take advantage of rerolls. The very first change I made to it was the commander. While Dodona was thematic, Riken would really work well with all those unique squadrons, and he was just so good in the tournament scene at the time, that I broke with my theme and swapped him in. Then I figured my lowish build would go towards second, because Riken, and I figured up on racking up a lot of points with my objectives, and I was off to test it out. It did pretty well, and I assessed its performance over a few games. A couple of flaws jumped out at me. One, the squadrons were very survivable and did chew through any others opposing them, but it often took until round 5 or 6 for that to happen, which meant that all that bomber support was wasted. Two, I had trouble getting the 2 tokens that I wanted to have on Yavaris and the frigate in the first 2 rounds, because I often wanted to resolve an order in the second turn. To fix the first problem, I dropped Rogue Squadron in favor of a Hawk 290. While Rogue did a lot of work in my list, I had a bunch of other X-Wings in the fleet, and they all had brace tokens. The Hawk would let me free up gold and any other fighters I needed to bomb ships when I needed them. Yeah, it broke the theme, but I wanted this list to be as efficient as possible. I then made some kind of crazy changes for the other ships. I dropped the ion cannons and added the Tantive IV title to the Corvette. With that, I could send over a token to the aforementioned ships in the first and second rounds. I also put Ahsoka Tano on the frigate to let me change those tokens to whatever I needed them to be, as I also found that even when I had tokens on my ships, they were regularly not the one I really needed. These changes made the main thrust of my list, lots of bombers, better, and increased flexibility in the ship so I could do more with what I had. The last change that I made was to the frigate. Over the course of several games, I noticed that the ECMs weren't really doing a lot. Yeah, I was able to keep my brace for when I needed it, but it took enough fire that I was often using ECM just to allow me to discard the brace, and when the shields went down, the redirect was useless. A lot of the time, I burned almost all, if not all, of my defense tokens on the frigate by about turn 5. Even then, it often didn't go from having shields to dead in the course of a single round, so I dropped the ECMs in favor of reinforced blast doors. I might occasionally lament having the brace locked down, but overall, blast doors were a better investment, and cheaper as well. My opponent would have to either really concentrate fire into my frigate to take it down in one round, or in the next, it would pop right back up again, usually just in time to activate it, and have it flee at speed 3 to safety after a parting shot or two. Finally, I knew that my red and blue objectives would be precision strike in superior positions because of my bombers, but I had a hard time settling on a yellow one. My fleet was too mobile for defensive ones, and I tried hyperspace assault and jamming barrier to little effect. I eventually settled on planetary ion cannon, since no one really wanted to go up against that one, and it pushed them towards the ones I wanted to play more anyway. So, that's my process. Now for a second opinion, I hand over things to Jim from the past, when he talked to Josh from Runecasters about how he makes his lists.
Alright, so for a slightly different second opinion, once again, I am turning to my buddy Josh from the Runecasters podcast to talk a little bit about what he goes through when he wants to make a list. Josh?
I start basically one of two different places. I have a ship I kind of want to build around, or a concept objective I want to build around. Lately, it's been a little bit of both, but previously it's been those two. I might build a fleet around wanting to maximize gladiator demolisher damage, you know, throwing the demolisher, all that jazz. What do I need to keep up with that? Throw tokens at it with Gazantes, keep fighters off of it with a raider and the instigator or the impetuous, possibly expanded hangar bays on that Gazante for fighter cover. I usually sit on these for a couple of days. The iteration of the Imperial objective control list I took to Vancouver, I think I had for 4 or 5 days before I actually started testing it out, because things that sound good to me at the time are frequently not what sound good to me in 2 to 3 days. I will go through some of my old fleets and wonder what the heck I was thinking with that combination of upgrades. The list I took against Sean that we talked about last week was a pair of interdictors and a Vic, because I wanted to try out Constantine and to get a more thorough grip on station assault. That was the weakest objective that I took from my Vancouver list, and I wanted to shore that up. So that fleet had interdictors kitted out for the 2-point upgrades and one with the slow, the G8s, you know, the G8 experimental projector for the slow. A couple of the ships had tractor beams, but the Vic had something weird like sensor teams, quad turbo laser turrets and Warlord. So you'd spend the sensor team, spend a dice, flip one of the red dice to an accuracy, use quad turbos to put another red dice with an accuracy, and use Warlord to flip it to a double. Because I also hate red dice. As a general rule, if I think I'm going to be throwing a lot of red dice, I try and get turbo laser turrets, DTT in there, or leading shots if possible. I'm a big fan of squadrons. I know a lot of people think the meta is a bit too heavy for squadrons, and while I was a little disappointed at the high number of flotillas that was at Worlds, I like that squadrons are a part of the game. When I started coming to Around the Table, the meta was Vicks and Gladiators, and we flew at each other, and one of us died. And that was it. I found that to be kind of boring. I, as a personal preference, tend to avoid things that are used an awful lot. I didn't start using the Demolisher again until really recently. I generally don't take like Mahdi or Rican. I wanna do things that people are not necessarily prepared for, which is probably why I enjoy shuttles and the Interdictor so much.
So the concept that you're going around, you talked a little bit like, it was a concept of, I want to make this ship really good. Are there any other, what other types of concepts cross your brain? Is there anything like officers or commanders?
I've done upgrades. I wanted to make slicer teams good. I remember before slicer teams came out, everyone was saying Constantine and slicer tools were going to be the demise of Armada. Neither of those things really came to fruition, but I absolutely gave slicer tools another go around recently. I mean, yeah, if there's a card that I think is not being utilized very well, I am not afraid to try to build around it, unless it's like the YV666, in which case, why do you even exist?
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's so true.
The best I could get that ship doing was a YV666 and Valen.
Valen Rudor, uh-huh.
Valen Rudor for the you can't shoot me if we're engaged with anyone else. Because then the heavy on the YV666 doesn't matter, and Valen's just running around throwing black dice at everyone, but still not super useful. Yeah, I like trying out the new stuff when it comes out. I gave the Arcatan's ships a good go, but they throw mostly red dice, so that was a brief tryst with me.
And, of course, you were talking about that you like to sit on your lists for a couple of days and think them over and make some different iterations, some changes to them. What's your process for post-game analysis and swapping things out?
I like to try two games per iteration, unless something went absolutely terrible. The first iteration of the Victoria regionals list had an Ark. I played you against that, and the Ark did so bad I replaced it with a Raider the next game. And I haven't flown an Ark in that list since. It conceptually doesn't work. The Ark doesn't really fly right. I go a lot on, I guess I want to say, feel. If the list doesn't feel like it's playing well together, it needs to do a bit better for me to want to keep playing it. Unless, like, that ship is the middle of the concept. For a while, I was having problems getting the Liberty to work like I wanted it to, and I had to stick with that one because I wanted to make the Liberty work too.
All right. Any other thoughts that you have about building lists?
Build weird stuff. Like, so what if Worlds was like 20 flotillas and a bunch of X-Wings with Biggs? That's not the way you want to fly. Fly weird things like a pair of MC-80s, the Liberty and a Pickle, or just a big blob of assault frigates. It's, the game is more fun when you're having fun.
Can't argue with that sentiment. All right. Well, thanks again for popping by one more time, Josh. And where can people find you in the Runecasters podcast?
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/Runecasters. We post all of our links to our podcasts there. And I think one actually went up today.
Oh, well, I'll have to take a look for that one. Of course, in the future, I will have already listened to it. But as of right now, no. All right. Well, thanks again, Josh. And take it away, future Jim.
And there we have it. I hope that gives you some ideas and tips for how to better build your fleets. After the break, I'm going to talk to Brandon, an Around the Table player who went to the recent Worlds tournament, about his experience there.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and now, like I said, I'm handing it off to Past Jim one more time to ask Around the Table player Brandon some questions about his Worlds experience.
All right, so we're going to do a special interview section here again for this episode. With me today is Brandon from Around the Table. You might remember from the regionals up in Vancouver, BC, that I faced him in the third round, talked about our game where it was a Riken on Riken matchup there. Brandon went to Worlds this year, the only one out of us here at Around the Table that did. So I've asked him on to talk a bit about his experience. Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
All right. So first things first, just how was Worlds? What'd you do there? How many games did you play? That sort of thing.
Yeah. So we had, 5 games, 3 the first day and 2 the second, with the cut on the second day. First day started checking at 1 o'clock. We started at first game at, 2.
Woof. 2 o'clock PM.
Yep. So we went till about, I got back to the hotel at 11:30. We had an hour cut in between the second and third game, to go get food. They had a large cafeteria there with, all sorts of sandwiches, hot, cold, and then, lots of drinks and snacks that you could get. So they were pretty stocked. So then the second day, check in at 9, game started at 10 o'clock, went till 3-ish, and then we had the cut of the top 4. Then we started the team tournament, which was a lot of fun, got in 2 games with a guy from San Antonio, and you had to select a person to be on your team. It wasn't randomly assigned. And since I didn't really know anyone there, I kind of ended up getting really lucky, getting in with the San Antonio group and made some friends there. And we teamed up and we had to be, you know, same side. So Rebels ended up getting back to the hotel again at like 11:30, well after the championship game had already been played.
So the extra team tournament was going on while the big, like the final 4 basically was going on, the last 2 matches.
Correct. So they were going on at the same time. So I sadly couldn't watch the top tables being played, which, you know, is kind of a bummer. I really would have liked to watch those go get played live.
What was the atmosphere like? I mean, was it a high pressure kind of thing? Was it a lot of, you know, obviously these are going to hopefully be like top tier players and that sort of thing. So did you like feel really pressured on your time? Did you have enough time for your games?
I never really felt pressured, but it was always always something in the back of your mind, was that they give you pretty much just time to get to the next table, and they started the time right as you were setting up obstacles and everything. So that was always kind of in the back of your mind. My games never went to time. Some people's went what felt like 30 minutes overtime. So that was kind of hit and miss. Since my games always ended early, I had like an extra hour and a half of downtime in between. It was fun to kind of walk around. We had about, you know, 80 people, so 40 tables going on at the same time. So it was fun to walk around and see everyone's, you know, awesome paint jobs and what they were flying, and kind of just talk to other people who finished early and discuss their metas.
Cool. So how about the people there? You said that you talked to the San Antonio people. So were people in general, were they all pretty nice people, or were they, you know, jerks like X-Wing players?
No, we were pretty cool people. It was a lot of people that I just understood, you know, we're there to have some fun. It's Worlds, you know, meet new people. My last opponent had faced 4 Ryken lists, so he was a little salty, but I understand that. You know, he always faced Rebels, and 4 of them were Ryken lists, so, you know, I understand being a little disappointed with that. I was lucky I faced 2 Imperial lists.
And X-Wing players, I was totally messing with you. If there's other people, it's not your fault that you don't play Armada, but, you know, you should really play Armada.
But yeah, in general, the people were really cool. You know, the breakfast beforehand, we probably had 40 people at the diner beforehand. So we were, you know, just a lot of people from everywhere. Virginia, we had a person from Alabama, the San Antonio group. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of cool people.
So, as far as those food options go, you know, and you were talking about, there's the cafeteria there. Was there ever enough time to go anywhere else other than like before or after during the game?
Maybe during, in between the second and third game where you had the extra hour in between. There wasn't anything really that close, and I don't know the area at all, but it wasn't really walking distance to the closest food place. So it didn't feel like there was enough time, but because they had the cafeteria, it wasn't like a huge deal, but it would have been nice to have, you know, some other options closer, but they don't control that.
The prize wall. I mean, mm-hmm. There's kind of some stuff that people saw, things that were on the prize wall, and that there was something about points that you could get by playing. What was up with that prize wall?
Yeah, so you got 5 points for every tournament that you entered. So if you're playing Armada and X-Wing, you got 10 points right off the bat. And then for every game that you won, you got 5 additional points. And then playing the team tournament, you'd get 5 points for finishing both the games and 5 additional points for every win. On the second day, so with Thursday, the prize wall opened up at noon, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So you had certain prizes for each game that were costed a certain amount of points. I got a lot of admirals for like 3 or 4 points. I got some old acrylic corner pieces, which I had never won before. And so they had like all sorts of dice and cards from all the different games. But the cards only came out in increments of 5, and no change was given. And so if you spent 28 points and had 30, you just left 2 on the table.
Hmm.
The items were portioned out each day, so they only had so many of the Darth Vader alt art cards on Thursday, so many on Friday, and so many on Saturday. So if they sold out, you would just have to wait the extra day. There wasn't a huge line on Thursday. I had barely enough time in between my games to get in line and get something, and then the postings were the matchups were posted right after that. On Thursday, there was a line forming when I got there at 10 o'clock. So there was a 2-hour wait, and there was, you know, Imperial Assault, the card game, X-Wing had just started that day. So there was a lot of people there, and I don't know really what they did about the wait times in between. The line was snaking through the store. But, you know, I ended up spending all of my tokens or all of my prize wall stuff.
So all things considered, would you go to Worlds again?
Oh, absolutely. And that was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was great to meet all these the new players. You know, see what all the different kind of local-ish metas are for a lot of other people. And just learning a lot of people's names on the forums also. You know, I met Boba Fett, who's from LA or California, and a lot of people from Pittsburgh that were there. So it was a lot of fun.
If you could time travel back in time to Brandon before you went to Worlds, what are the pieces of advice that you would give yourself, knowing now, like getting there on time, or just anything about navigating? Basically, any tips that you would give your past self towards making your Worlds experience better?
I would have scoped out food options in the area beforehand. Again, they were kind of few and far between out there. I wish I would have practiced more against a 134-point Riken ace list. there's not really a lot I would have changed for me, personally.
And no little tips or anything? No little, like, tricks that you would tell somebody, hey, there's this thing about Worlds. Doing this is a rookie mistake.
As Jason Bourne would say in the books, sleep is a weapon. So sleep well beforehand. You know, it is an all-day thing. You are exhausted at the end of each day. So, you know, prep for that. Don't take a coffee at 11 o'clock or whatever p.m. But, prep for a long day. You're going to be on your feet. Sure, they had a lot of chairs. But, you know, it's different playing Armada standing up than sitting down. Just prep for a very long day.
Comfortable shoes.
Yeah, comfortable shoes.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Brandon. Hopefully we'll all go with you next year to Worlds. And we'll all have a really good time and meet everybody as well. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Past Jim. And I'd also like to thank Brandon and Josh for their assistance in this episode. And that's it for this episode. Next time, I'm going to start in on the Corellian Conflict Squadrons. I'm not sure where I'll start off or where I'll finish, so let's just say it'll be a surprise which ones I talk about. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. What do you think, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim, or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.